everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan, and we are from ReverseThieves.com. If you have any questions, show suggestions, corrections that are burning in your mind, or just thoughts about anime, manga, or related topics, then you can email us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com, or you can go on our Discord and talk about One Piece, your fun things that you've built in Tears of the Kingdom. I'm sure that Kate playing that would love to see, what do you call that?
I am so bad at building things. Like,
some person who made like this flying mobile death platform that they just hop off of and it just kills things while the Link just kind of like just sits back and like has a Mai Tai while this thing just floats out and just uses lasers to just floats in the sky and uses lasers to destroy everything. It's kind of amazing.
That is really amazing because I can barely get two boards like stuck together. It takes me so much effort.
I'm like, I'm sure that like someone will have the video of like, here's the device I made that killed Ganon while I just sat and like went, ah, very good flying death device that I made. Destroy the boss for me.
This month on the podcast, we are doing sort of a catch-all, catch-up with a bunch of shows and movies that we've been watching. And I think June will probably be similar and maybe some, you know, shows that we finished lately, but just a grab bag.
I swear there are shows that I finished that, like, I wanted to talk about, but in the interim, I forgot about. So if anybody's like, Al, I know you were watching this show. What did you think of it? Please write in and remind me of shows that I should talk about.
That can be in June. You can affect the June podcast, everyone. But first,
We have the Type Moon Minute. We didn't have this much going on this month. It was kind of a little dead month. We did get an FGO, the Ilya's Castle event, which is based on a mini game from the sequel to Fate's Day Night, Fate Hollow Ataraxia, called Ilya's Castle, which is basically a parody of Takeshi's Castle. Have you ever seen that old like Japanese game show?
Yes, I have.
Yes. So basically they made like a Takeshi's Castle type mini game in Fate Hollow, and that's the event it's based on. And it's like a little lottery box event. So it's mostly meant to like for you to just farm the event and get materials you need for the game. But they do have like running commentary from the characters. The commentary from the people from Takeshi's Castle. So I've been reading like the translations of people that I've put online of the commentary that you can understand only if you read Japanese. I did find it funny that they went back to the little mini game from Fate Hollow, but I think that was always a popular little mini game, so it's unsurprising that they made reference to that one. And Ilya is always a popular character, so I'm sure people are glad to see her pop up again. Although, like, the event for the servant is just like some mecha designing ninja, so she has like relationship to like some other characters, but like, unless you're like a ninja fan and like, ah, yes, this lady is the mother, or in the Fate universe, like creator of, because in one of the ninjas is a robot. So in actual lore of, you know, the actual world, She's supposed to be a mother of this other famous ninja, but in the Fate universe, she's like the creator of this other robot ninja. It's a fun event. But they basically just seem to have this here to build up for anniversary event, which is going to happen in August. They did, when they announced this event, they did like announce the date of like the big, like Tokyo Dome event that they're going to, you know, show off when they're going to celebrate the 8th anniversary. And they showed up some like character designs and stuff from that. They'll probably have maybe next month, like a bigger like hype for that. But this was more like the, all right, this is when the event is going to be. Here's where it's going to be. You know, here's the website that you can, you know, try to get tickets for the event that, and here's when those tickets will go on site. And so, you know, more of a look, you know, announcement of the announcement, which is, you know, so popular in media these days. And then after that's going to be, you know, the summer event. So, you know, the next 2 months will be kind of busy. So right now this is just kind of the, what they're doing until then.
Not that I don't love a short Type Moon moment. Was there not any like thing for Golden Week or anything like that?
Oh, right. I totally forgot about it. I thought I had talked about it last month. Yes, there was something for Golden Week. It was the big Fate Arcade. I
think you did talk about that.
Yes. So Golden Week, they had the Fate Arcade collab. That's where they had, I mentioned they had the preview. They, so during the collab they had Beast Class Draco, who is basically like, what if all the Christian rumors about Nero were true and she was the Antichrist thing. They had young Cucullin. And they had Lucretia, which was who nobody expected because she wasn't in Fate Arcade, but she was actual Nero's like chief poisoner, because apparently Nero loved poisoning people. Actual historical Nero poisoned his mom and several other rivals. So. Like the person who was in charge, like historically in charge of Nero's poisons, was an assassin servant that was introduced in the event. The big thing that people really liked was they like brought on a completely new writer that they hadn't had, not even before in FGO, but had just never done anything from Type Moon. So it was kind of unexpected, but people really liked this new guy's writing. So the event like got a lot of praise for people were a little surprised that like a relative newcomer had like done such a really good Fate story. Thank you, Kate, for reminding me that there was I remembered talking about Tiamat, so it like popped out of my head that like that I had only talked about the preview event. I hadn't actually talked about the Fate Arcade Nero event. See, Kate, you're just as much of a Type Moon fan as I am now.
Oh, yes.
Clearly the only answer.
That is the logical conclusion.
Other than that, we will both, since we're now huge Type Moon fans, we will both see you next month, Type Lunatics.
So, I have been watching a lot of anime movies in the last month. That was, I don't know, just like knocking them out. So, the first one I wanted to talk about, and I realized when I put this on the list that Al watched this quite a while ago, but he never got the chance to talk about it. So I think we can both talk about it this time, which is the Jujutsu Kaisen movie. And this is, you know, I like this trend of the movies linking seasons and like they're being important and not just one-off movies that like the status quo goes back to being the status quo at the end of or something for a lot of these like shonen series.
So before we go anywhere else, although that is a good point, yeah, no, like Shonen Jump definitely doesn't seem to just be putting out the standard, like, here's a movie, it has really great animation, but the story is garbo, and everybody is like, hey, did you see that one fight scene? Oh, yeah, no, the rest of the movie is horrible, and there's some dumb kid character or something. Like, I think there were, like, two One Piece movies that had, like, super annoying kid characters that everyone's like, oh, God, why is this person here?
Ooh, that's a good one. I should put that on the list, the One Piece Red movie. I should put on the list. Anyway.
I think it is important to note before we start where in the timeline this movie is, because I think that if I think the one major criticism I have of this movie is that it does a very poor job of telling you where in the timeline this movie is, because it can be extremely confusing otherwise. So it turns out this movie is a prequel that like introduces a character that will be very important later on and has like some important backstory elements for characters, but the movie does a poor job of explaining when it happens. So like, what is this weird side story? Why is this character alive? Why did these characters not, like, I remember you were, like, asking these questions, and I was like, oh, Kate, it's a prequel, and that's why X, Y, and Z. And then you're like, oh, yeah, no, that all instantly makes sense only after it's, like, explained to you, though.
Well, to clarify, I understood that it was a prequel.
Oh, okay.
I think it is important to talk about that it is a prequel. The thing that confused me about this movie is the things that happen at the end of the movie, it's still a prequel. So like the things that happen at the end of the movie are very mysterious because of where we are in the current timeline. So yeah. Like, I think there's a lot of unanswered questions that are mysteries that are not answered in this and then create more mysteries in the main series because of the which characters are alive or like which characters are doing things or which characters haven't appeared or have appeared. But I think you're right though. At the beginning, you're sort of like trying to place you are trying to like, okay, wait. You're like, okay, when you eventually figure it out, like as you go. But yes, it is jarring because it does seem like, and you're right that what I said at the beginning made it sound like it's a linking story. And I think it will help inform whatever's going to happen in the next season. But yeah, it's not just like a story in between seasons. That is a really good point.
Plus, who's the guy who has like the, you know, the cloth over his eyes? I'm sure you know his name.
Oh, his name is escaping me at the moment. The teacher guy.
Yeah, but the teacher guy doesn't like at the beginning of the movie go, hey, remember that time? And then does a flashlight, goes doodle-loo, doodle-loo, doodle-loo,
doodle-loo. Right, because he is similarly to the kind of, it's kind of the similar setup to the main storyline of Jujutsu Kaisen, right? Because we have this we have this teenager and he's getting sort of recruited because he's having these, like, some stuff has happened, powers are happening, curses are happening, you know, so, like, you have a similar setup, so you're like, wait, okay, is maybe teacher guy is just, like, recruiting a new member, you know, to, like, the school. But this is actually before all of the main story takes place. One of the things that should be obvious is you have to see Jujutsu Kaisen to see this movie. It does not in any way inform you about anything or how anything works or what is going on. So clearly not a starting place, but...
yeah, because a lot of these Shonen Jump movies will have at least like a little like 5-minute thing at the beginning of like, here's a brief overview of the whole movie, guys. So if you just popped in the first time, you know, here are main casts and here's the premise of the world. And, you know, usually like the beginning fight scene sets that up. So, and that's like the starting incident that starts the rest of the movie that has none of that. It's just like, you've watched Jujutsu Kaisen, here you go.
Although, now that we just talked about it, I could totally see this movie in the 90s being like the only thing we would have gotten. Mm-hmm. And I would have enjoyed the fuck out of it. Because it's still really enjoyable. Because, I mean, he is a new recruit, so they a little bit explain, like, things. And, like, it has a villain, you know, like... You and the main cast doesn't appear, so like I think you could actually get away with it. Maybe you just won't understand what's happening in regular Jujutsu Kaisen. So
also, Kate. Now that I think about it, this is just random, but the main character who's introduced in this story does feel more of a, like a 90s lead, especially with like how like. Depressed he is because of his powers and all that and his tragic backstory and stuff, whereas I feel like the good boy, like plucky, or like the kind of like more like good, you know, rebel boy with the heart of gold is more of a more modern protagonist. This guy feels very 90s protagonist.
That's really interesting, because I just gotta tell you right now, I, like, deeply, deeply love him, and I'm, like, very, very invested in Yuta and his sad boy status and, like, everything that happens to him from the beginning to the end to, I'm, like, very invested in wherever he shows up in the main story now. So I think they did a really good job of establishing him as a character in here. The other thing I really loved about this movie, and I think a lot of people, if you've watched the first season, this movie is great, especially if you wanted to know more about the characters that I like best, besides Fushiguro, who is not in this. Maki, Izunami and Panda all get like major highlighted in here, and I liked those characters a lot, but now I really love them. I just thought it did a really great job of kind of rounding out those characters, giving us a little bit more information about them, making me really invested in all of them. Like, to the point that I did not miss the main cast in this movie. But, like, if you were to tell me, right, that, like, Jujutsu Kaisen is about Yuta, Maki, Izunami, and Panda, I would be like, that is fine by me. Like, absolutely feel completely happy with that. And I'm going to look at that as a strength of the movie and not, like, an indictment of the main cast of the, you know, of the series. But, like, that it just did such a great job with them that, like, I just feel so connected to them now. And, like, their connections with each other were just really well established in here. I just loved it. this movie also gives us a lot more insight into Geto, who is a major antagonist in the main story. So, and his, like, relationships. So,
because, yeah, most of the time he's just been, like, a background plotter. And, like, they've had, like, the more flashy villains take the forefront. So it was interesting to, like, get a little... because it's very clear that he's, like, supposed to be, like, the big, like, the ultimate big bad guy. Like, all these other, like, chuckle fucks are basically, like, killing time till he, like, unveils his big plan. So I do feel it interesting that, like, they gave him some depth here, as opposed to just constantly having him be the guy behind the guy.
You think he's gonna be more bad than, like, the demon inside of main character that they're collecting, I mean, like, the fingers of or whatever?
I have my personal theories. I have a feeling that dude, he might steal the fingers at the end, and basically, I wonder if that's one of his shticks. And basically power himself up. That's my, like, Al personal theory. And that our main character will have to, like, develop his own power to fight without the fingers. But I could be totally wrong about this.
Now, one thing that Al mentioned earlier is still true in this movie is that there are some incredible fights, visuals, but it's also a good plot and a good story and everything else. But yeah, there's like a major fight at the end. It looks, you know, the whole thing looks really, really great throughout. You can just see how much they're sort of investing in this series, and you see it in the TV series as well.
Shonen Jump is definitely throwing their money. I mean, we were just commenting, or at least I remember you were commenting. I don't know if you did it on the Reverse Thieves or our own personal Discord, that like the season premiere of Demon Slayer once again looked like a movie in its own right.
It really did. It was... that show is ridiculous.
So I feel like, yeah, Jujutsu Kaisen is, like, pretty amazing just in the normal TV series, and, like, the movie, they went up, was at a huge level, but they did go up a little bit on their, like, their scale of animation and just set pieces and stuff.
Yeah, and I think it got me really excited about the second season, which comes out this summer. So if you haven't ended up watching this movie yet, and, you know, watched the first season, I think it would get you really hype for what's next for it. So I definitely recommend it. I really, really liked this movie a lot. And I haven't watched the first season for quite a while at this point. So, like, but it was really nice to jump back into the world. So, highly recommend.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. Plus, it does, like you said, it is, like, theoretically, James seemed to hint that, like, you could probably go in to the second season without seeing this movie. But, like... like, once again, it gives a lot of depth. Like, otherwise, the dude who's the main character of this movie is just going to appear out of nowhere. You're not going to get his backstory. And they do a lot to flesh out secondary characters and really get you invested in them. So, it might not be critical, but there's literally no reason not to watch it. Like, you're only not going to get more out of the series because of if you don't watch it.
And but it's also just like, it's not like it's a slog or something like, oh, well, you need to watch this to like know X. It's like, no, this is actually a really enjoyable movie.
Yeah, because I feel like when they have like a new protagonist, that could be the case, but like you said, the main guy, this guy is pretty, he's different, he's distinctly different from the main character, but, you know, he's not insufferable.
Would watch a show all about Yuta. Okay, that's the end of my Jujutsu Kaisen movie review.
So now we will jump into another fantasy series that is equally beloved and well animated. And there's absolutely no sarcasm in my voice when I say that. So, because my roommate went to ASEN last weekend, I had the apartment to myself. And I'm like, I'm going to play a whole bunch of Witch on a Holy Night now that I had this free weekend. And I started playing, and then I realized the controller was dying. So I went to charge it, and I was like, well, let me see what is on Crunchyroll that I can just watch while I wait for this controller to charge. And I discovered that there was a third and fourth season of Sorceress Stabber Orphan. Season 3, Sorceress Stabber Orphan, Chaos and Urban Rama. And half of Sorcerer Stabber Orphan. Where's the other season's name? Which is equally amazingly titled. It's like Doom Dragon Domain.
And I'm going to say that you only watched half of it, Al, because you are stopping. Just stop watching. Or I feel like you're complaining about it, but, like, you've also watching four seasons of it. So clearly there's something that keeps you watching.
Like I said with the first two seasons, like, it does have, like, this distinctly, like, 90s. I mean, it's basically the seasons were made because it's the 25th anniversary of Orphan.
I know, but like most shows don't even get four seasons, even popular ones. So like, what is going on?
So I kind of mentioned this when I mentioned season two. Like the original Orphan TV show, like amazingly goes off the rails, like near instantly. Like, the first season of Orphan is filled with so much filler that when they did it in this reboot series, they finished the first season of Orphan in 3 episodes. That's how much filler they threw into the original production of Orphan. And the second series is completely original character. Like, it's a completely original plot with original new characters and doesn't do anything from the original novels. So someone decided that, what do you call it? We have to go back and like actually do the story of Orphan. I'm sure that you like erased that most of it, but just by like the season titles, like I would like to reiterate that like the author of Orphan is up there with Tomino for Tomino style names. Like almost everybody in Orphan has Western style names, but they all have Tomino style Western names. But I just find it interesting that I didn't know and you didn't even know that there was an Orphan season 3 and 4. Like,
and that it's currently running. Like, it's just continuing.
I also found out from a lot of research that there's an Orphan sequel series. But the main character of that is, so Orphan eventually ends up with someone. I'm not even going to spoil it. Not because, like, I'm against spoilers, but because no one cares. And they have kids, right? So you assume the sequel series is about the kids, right? It is about a kid of a character from Orphan, but it is about the kid of two side characters. Like, Orphan's kids exist in the world and apparently make cameos in the sequel series. But it is like the only way I could put it is if, let's say you had Slayers, and then the Slayers sequel series, and this is probably making this sequel series to be too interesting, but what if it was about Zelgadis and Amelia's kid instead of
Who wouldn't want that?
So, as I said, I'm probably making this orphan sequel series seem way too interesting by using that as the example, but it's like the first example that popped into my mind that gives you a clear idea of like who the main character is of this orphan sequel series.
Anyway, back to the actual orphan series that you are watching.
So, like, apparently, like, weirdly, we find out in, in Orphan Season 2, that the gods were kind of dicks, and they all got exiled outside of the world in this, like, prison, because humanity was just tired of the gods being dicks. And like, the church just keeps up the premise that they're still contacting the gods, but, like, they're just terrified that the gods will actually one day come back. And the end of Season 2, like, the basically, to use the Critical Role example that only makes sense to Kate, the Divine Gate has broken, and, like, so, like, there's a distinct worry that the gods could find their way back in. So Season 3 is all about Orphan and company, like, trying to find out the whereabouts of this one character who's kind of involved with, like, the gods and what happened to her. And then, like, these dragons get involved and they're fighting dragon assassins, and there's this mythical sword and stuff. And they basically deal with, like, the assassins, the dragon assassins that were dealing there. And they get, like, a clue of where to go next. And so the fourth season is kind of, like, very directly. Now they're, like, dealing with the dragons and the church, and, like, it seems to be, like, coming to a head of certain people, like, well, if the gods come back, if we can summon these greater demons, then they can fight the gods for us. And the other people are like, that sounds like the worst idea ever. That's like, man, I have a real tiger problem, so I'm gonna get all these bloodthirsty bears to kill the tigers for me. I'm sure nothing will go wrong with this plan. And then there are a whole bunch of people like, if we kill all these people involved, then they can't get the gods or the demons.
I mean, it is called Sorcerer Stabber, so I assume there's a lot of murdering.
They introduced a whole team of Tower from the Fangs in the fourth season of assassins that got, like, wiped out in two episodes. Which I was like, impressive, thanks. I actually kind of expected you guys to stick around a little longer in this season. I was telling Kate a little beforehand, and I was discussing this with my brother James, who I mentioned before. Orphan is like the summation of mid. It's like nothing in Orphan is bad, so super bad, but nothing about it is also super great or even super good. It's all just in the middle there, like, just constantly, like. Also, ever since the first season, there are just always multiple factions fighting each other around the orphan and his party that just tried to like weave their way through. Like, there were, in each of these sections, there are like two or three factions that I didn't even mention because they're just, they're not worth mentioning to anybody who isn't watching Orphan. And I assume everybody watching this review is just curious about, I'm almost just talking about this show to talk about it because I don't think I've ever heard another person talk about Orphan other than me. So like, if you're just curious about what kind, like, what kind of show is Orphan and maybe I should watch it? And the answer is you probably shouldn't. Unless like, you absolutely need some 90s nostalgia. And then if so, just go watch Slayers or Lodos.
I mean, I guess what's, is there like a final trajectory, or is each season have its own sort of goal?
So the whole, like, so there's this lady that like, basically like the Tower of Thorns and Orphan takes in basically like either orphans. It takes in orphans and basically treats them to be like the world's greatest magical assassins. And so like one of the girls from the orphanage is like basically the main character is like super in love with, and she's been involved in every plot. I mean, she's basically the girl they're looking for that basically like accidentally opened up the crack and is like communicating with like the main goddess, and like she's been like infected. So like all the plots have been around her, because the first plot is all about her, and then the second plot, she's the one like looking into the church and all that stuff, and she's the one who accidentally opens up the crack at the end of the second one, and they're trying to find out what happened to her in the third one, and now they know that she's fused with like one of the goddesses and is trying to break her way back in to the world in the fourth one. That's why they, one of the groups wants to like bring back the Demon King, so that like if she does fully break back into the world, they can, their plan is to throw the Demon King at her. And hopefully they'll just wipe each other out, and then they can seal back the crack before any other gods like try to slip their way in. So like clearly like her whole like Orphan and her storyline is, you know, the accumulation of this whole thing. I think this might actually be the last season, so I don't think there'll be, you know, Orphan, Sorcerer Stabber, Orphan Season 5, Electric Boogaloo. So, like, I feel like if I just stick it out, I'll see the end of the series at the end of this season.
And you'll feel rewarded.
Yes. Because I, unlike Kate, am not smart enough to know when I should just hit the eject button. Which is, you know, if you're ever curious, because I feel like sometimes people feel like we're too much on the same page, as opposed to, you know, like a Siskel and Ebert relationship where, like, you know, we're constantly fighting about things. But if you're ever curious of the one of the key differences between me and Kate is smart enough to know when to hit the jack button sometimes, whereas I will just doggedly, like, I'm going to see this to the end.
Some people have to know. So
I have to know what's going to happen to Azalee.
And you will.
So yes, I'll at least vaguely report about it in a later, unless I forget about it like I have with, as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast. Please get us out of Orphan territory, Kate, and move us on to something hopefully more, recommendable.
Oh, I can do that, indeed. So I think if any of you are in the Discord, you might have seen me talking about free the Final Stroke movies, because they, Crunchyroll said that they were going to be up, and then they were late, and now only the first one is up, and as of this recording, the second movie is still not up. So, you know, you get double free podcasts from me, because I will absolutely 100% be talking about the final film. But I also have to talk about the first part of it, and also I did watch Road to the World, which I don't really need to talk about. It's just a recap movie compilation of the third season. This is the most important part of what I'm going to tell everyone, which is, Al, do you know when the first season of Free came out?
Clearly, it was nothing more than 5 years ago, because I will lie to myself and pretend that time has not passed me by, and that, what do you call it, my old man bones are closer to the grave than I want to admit.
Well, look, I absolutely understand how you feel, because when I was looking this up to talk about, you know, this the finale of Free, the first Free season is 10 years old.
5 years ago. Cool.
I was like, are you fucking kidding me right now? Like, Free is a decade in the past at this point. That is really hard for me to believe, but that is the truth.
Kate. So, as I mentioned partially, that my roommate really likes watching VTubers, and there's a male VTuber that I like called Vesper, who is talking about, like, older video game systems, and what is a retro video game system came up. And me and my roommate came to the conclusion that, at least in our book, you can't be retro until it's at least 20 years old. So, Free is merely old, but it's not yet retro by our rules. So, good, Kate. We're still good.
I mean, it can't be retro because it's not even finished yet. Like, I don't know, like, is that even possible? I don't, whatever. I don't know. But I just, that really blew me away. It's been a really, you know, long journey for this anime, because of the tragedies of Kyoto Animation. You know, the finale of Free has, like, been delayed quite a bit from what it was originally planned to be. So these, not only the Final Stroke movies, but, like, the Road to the World compilation film, like, even though it was just a, you know, like, a recap movie, it was, like, a really emotional recap, like, the way that they cut it, and there was, like, sort of some moments of, like, narration at points, and, like, just the I don't know, it was just, like, I found myself being really emotional about the story. Obviously I'm very invested in this series, and, like, just to know that I've been watching it for 10 years and on and off, obviously, over those 10 years, like, makes you feel really invested, I guess, or makes me feel that way. So, for the Final Stroke, it's broken into two parts, and each movie is an hour and a half, so it's, like, a really substantial finale to the series, and it takes place in, like, at World Championships for swimming, and the focus is on Haru, Rin, and Ikiya, who is, if you haven't seen all of Free, Ikiya is, like, a main character in the third season, and, like, from characters' pasts and stuff. So the story really, like, focuses on those three characters, and I felt like I was kind of surprised the trajectory of the first movie, and Haru in particular is like, really kind of starting to, you know, he's, like, grown so much over the course of the series, but, like, he's starting to, like, question his place in this movie. So I think it's like, a lot of mental blocks for all the characters in this first movie leading up to these competitions. And one of the sort of themes for Haru, and he has a coach at this point, but his coach says to him, sort of like, you have to give something up. And he really is like grappling with that concept in the movie of like, I'm not going, like, I am not, I don't have to, like, I refuse to believe that. And like, by the end of the movie, he's like very unsure of himself. So it's very interesting because like Haru as a character isn't really unsure of himself. Like, that's not who he is, like, or at least that's not who he has been. So like, this movie is just like very interesting kind of from a mental state, his mental state, and like the relationships like kind of like come to a head in this movie, and like there is sort of a regression there where like Haru starts to cut things off from himself, and like not having the second movie to immediately follow it up, like, it feels like, oh man, we're in a dark, kind of a dark place at the end of the first movie. So it's like, yeah, it's just like in a very emotional point for all of the characters. And also there's an interesting thing that Haru kind of repeats in this movie, which is, he keeps saying, like, at 20, I'll be ordinary. And then, like, by the end of the movie, you sort of hear his whole thing, which is, like, if you do something when you're 10, and he's talking about, like, swimming or doing something amazing, basically. And he's like, at 10, you're a prodigy. At 15, you're a genius. And at 20, you're ordinary. That's what he feels like his... He's like, he's really trying to get to something before he thinks that, like, he's in adulthood. And then, like, sees that as meaning different things. I don't know. Yeah. It's like, oh, man, it's just really good, you guys. And of course, it still has all the other favorite characters of everyone in it, like, supporting different characters. And, like, there is stuff going on at the school, like in Iwatobi and stuff like that, but
do they still remember Gao exists? Or
yes,
excellent.
You know, and there's, you know, characters cheering people on and things like that. So we don't. It's not like solely like we've just forgotten all the other characters, but there is like a heavy focus on, because these three characters are kind of the career swimmers, sort of like, and There's like other things going on with some of my personal favorite characters, that was all very good and like emotionally very cathartic and everything. So I think it just feels like a little more like there's just like the heavy emotional resonance, which is always in the series, but like just a little bit more like mature, about the mental states of the characters. So, like, really enjoying having these movies. I've been waiting a really long time to see them. They've taken a really long time to come out in English. I don't know why that is. I don't know if there's, like, less interest in free at this point, and, you know, they just haven't prioritized it. I don't know. But it's been a while since these movies came out in Japan, so I really hope that we get the second one like very soon, and that like it will be sad to say goodbye to the series, but I'm also really excited to see the end of it.
Question that I'm not sure you can answer, but more curious about what you think. Then, do you feel that this increased maturity that you're seeing here is a product of maybe newer people having to work on free because of the tragedies at Kyoto Animation? Or do you think this is more the natural course of how the series went, and like this is probably where it was always meant to go? Or maybe it just where it evolved naturally, even if like maybe, you know, it wasn't the initial.
I mean, I don't know if, you know, it was always conceived this way, but it feels pretty natural because the characters have also gotten older. Like Haru and everybody is like, a lot of our main cast is in college. You know, they've not long graduated, but like, I mean, in my mind, it feels long because obviously it's been 10 years, but like, you know, they are supposed to be in that transitional place of like going from high school to adulthood and like deciding like, what am I going to do? Like, is this, what is my career? Like, what am I going to do with my life? That sort of stuff. So I feel like it feels natural. And it's still free. I mean, it's still, like, everyone's having, like, emotional connections in the water. I mean, it's not like it's, like, it's not as if the height of ridiculous is not there. Like, it still totally is. But I just like the, some of the things they're tackling, I guess. But, you know, it's, like, knowing that it's 10 years ago is amazing because it's so pivotal. Like, it was, it's so, even if people don't watch it anymore, even if there's so many anime fans who have never seen it, because if something's 10 years old, that means there are tons and tons and tons of anime fans who have never seen it. It's just like so influential.
But I also feel like it with, like, I think maybe Haikyuu. You're the sports girl, so you would know a little more than I. Or the sports boy girl. I feel like it was one of the series that really helped sports anime become a thing in the U.S. Because, like, for the longest time, the idea was, like, no American company would pick up sports series because they would say sports series don't work. They work in Japan. They don't work in America. We only get like a small fraction of guys who watch sports series, and even of the guys, they're minimal. But I feel like Free and like Haikyuu are the ones that like stick out in my mind of like really like, maybe to some degree, Kuroko's Basketball, of like making both genders really embrace sports anime and just like getting it like a mainstream appeal that it never had here in the States.
I mean, I think you're right. That was like a kind of a renaissance of sports anime at that time, I think. And also, though, I think, but I... Haikyuu and Kuroko's and all of those, I think they're all kind of, you know, they all are related. But I do think Free, you remember that there was like a promo that was supposed to be like, it's just a joke promo. Yeah. Like, it's just, look at this. Isn't this so ridiculous? It's hot guys. Swim it, you know? And I feel like, and then it was like, no, it's real. And like, everyone was like, yay, thank God it's real. And it just, I feel like it sort of changed something about the way it's approached, I guess. Or like, you know, it was like, it was putting it on the forefront as opposed to like, oh, the girls are going to read the sports manga and they're going to like love all the guys. And then this was like, yeah, but we're going to make that the forefront of what we're doing. And we're going to like, you know, like lean in basically. Something about that is different. I do, you know, it's just, Free. It's still good. So I'm really looking forward to the last movie. You know, I do think, unfortunately, compilation movies just don't. They only capture it if you've already seen it. You know what I mean? Like, because then you can, like, remember. It's mostly, like, to make you remember your feelings, I think.
Give you a quick refresher before you dive back in.
Pun intended. So I don't think there's any really quick way to watch Free at this point. Like, it's you need to watch 3 seasons and then these final 2 movies, basically, if you were to experience the whole story. But I do think, like, it's been a really emotional journey, and I will absolutely cry, I'm sure.
So what are your hopes for in the second movie?
Well, I hope that Haru learns to swim free again. That's the most important thing. I don't know. I think it will end in a hopeful way, and that's, so I guess that's my hope.
Tasha Nojo.
Yeah, like, I mean, honestly, I couldn't figure out, like I was saying, because Haru kept talking about this thing about 20, and I was like, oh my god, is Haru, like, gonna die? But I don't feel like, I don't think that's the Free story. Like, I just don't think that that would be what would happen. So I guess my hope is that doesn't happen, but I do hope we get to see some of the characters that aren't focused on as much. I do really want to see, or all of the, I guess I want to see everybody in the future. I do want to see, like, what are they doing? Or, like, what, you know, like, I hope that there is a little bit of a, like, let us see, you know, where everyone ends up kind of thing. I don't know. Like, this, the first movie, honestly, there were some surprises, because it's not a super happy first movie. But we gotta get through that to get to the hopeful finale. So. Oh, and then my fake wish list is for Rin and Sosuke to get married. You know, for the series to stop teasing all of the pairings and, like, let them all be actual pairings.
So I only have one more question, Kate. How surprised were you that all the Cosmo Beauty swimming thing was leading up to a big battle with aliens at the end?
I could never have predicted it.
Yeah, I think that was probably the biggest surprise in the movie. So, I figure the last thing is, I just wanted to talk about a series that I had very tentatively listed as one of my favorite series from last year, which was Uncle from Another World. They finally... enough people didn't have COVID anymore that they could finish off the series. Thank goodness. They released the last bit of episodes of Uncle from Another World, like, this season, like, not that long ago, even. Like, in the middle of the season as well. So I finally was able to finish that out. It's definitely not like the end of that series. It's basically, like, the best way I could put it is the end of, like, arc one. Like, because we know that Uncle eventually makes his way back home. But essentially at this point, we now learn the plan of how Uncle plans to figure out a way home. Like, he's like, at the end of this arc, he's like, all right, I've done task A, And I'm pretty sure through my video game knowledge that if, like, this is task one of four, so if I do all four, that clearly is the thing that will get me home. Because, you know, as Sega fanboy number one, he views everything for video games. So he's like, if I basically defeated this one boss, if I could unseal the other three bosses, I will clearly then find the way home. And so, like, it ends with him being like, all right, I guess it's time to take out bosses 3 through 4. You know, 2, 3, and 4. And, like, the little band of heroes that he's built up alongside him being like, I guess this is what we're doing now.
Flawless logic.
Yeah, no, it was pretty entertaining. They did have, like, a Hot Springs episode that quickly, like, I feel like a lot of series has been doing this now, where, like, they realize, like, the Hot Spring episode is so, like, a trope that they'll just very briefly have, like, a 5-minute, like, thing in the Hot Spring, and then they quickly cast that aside to have some hijinks, like, fight a monster or do some bigger thing at the Hot Springs. And I feel like it continued that trend of, like, oh, we're here at the Hot Springs, and then, like, the elf immediately goes off and is like, I'm going to find this ancient weapon that's here. And, like, all the other characters go off and do something, and then there's a huge fight and monsters and stuff. And it was like, all right, we have the Hot Spring, and we have everybody there, you know, for the brief fan service, but we're not going to have a whole episode of fan service. I feel like beach episodes, they've done that in a few beach episodes as well. Like, they'll just have, like, a one scene of the characters in the outfits, and then quickly, like, I remember a series that nobody remembers but I enjoyed, which was, like, Sacred Seven with, like, the mystical stone powers. They had, like, a beach episode, and, like, the girls were in the beach episode for, like, 3 minutes, and then a monster breaks out, and they immediately go back to their regular clothing. And it was almost like, all right, here's your beach episode. Here, you throw them in swimsuits. Let's move on.
So I watched, I think, like, 2 or 3 episodes of this, Al. Mm-hmm. So does the story continue to switch between current and the past, or?
Yeah, kind of... no.
Yeah, okay.
Essentially, like, the story is generally, most episodes will start in the real world. There'll be some event, you know, they need to get an air conditioner, or because it's super hot, or somebody wants to order food or something. And eventually, like, Uncle will be like, oh, that reminds me of that, the time this happened in the world. And he'll move on. And, like, you know, the main guy and, you know, the girl will be like, wait. Go into a little more detail about that. And be like, all right, here's the screen. Like, this is the time that, you know, me and Ice Girl did this. That's why it reminded me of that.
Just checking, since you mentioned, like, oh, the, you know, adventuring party had, you know, that sort of stuff. So just.
So, yeah, it's still the format. It's still mostly in the real world, so we're just getting, like every episode's basically, like, half in the real world and half flashback to, you know, the isekai world.
Well, I'm glad this series finally got finished. I mean, what a ordeal it went through.
I mean, theoretically, there's still clearly more manga they could go back and do more, but at least they have, like, what do you call it? At least they finished the, you know, the season they intended. And, you know, clearly, like, him like, I think this is the way I can find my way home. If I could just find like three more of these like god creatures and defeat them. So, it feels like that was supposed to be the ending to the first season all along. So, yeah, it is nice that they at least got to end the series where they wanted to.
I wonder if, obviously it was just nothing that they could do about it, but I wonder if this really affected, you know, that it wouldn't get a second seat because it was just like, it wasn't able to reach the audience, you know, it just didn't come out in a timely manner. So like it might have tanked its ability to get another season or something.
Or that like if it had been popular, how much did it drop off that, you know, how many people knew that it came back and, you know, or if they did, had they moved on to other stuff and was like, Amanda, I would have eagerly ate up those episodes if they came out when they were supposed to, which, you know, like you said, there's nothing anybody could do about that. That's just bad luck.
Yeah. But you'd recommend it now. I mean, obviously it was one of your favorite shows of the year, but...
Yeah, I feel like the last episodes were... Because it felt like, yeah, it was the same team. They just, you know, they got hit harder than a lot of other studios. So, but it felt like the rest of the series, I felt like if, you know, I feel like we have enough people who just go back and like, I guess I'll go back and watch the series. Now you can just watch it all the way through and, you know, still worth it. If nothing else, you get to learn Elf Girl's name so she isn't just Elf Girl. It did remind me that I should eventually go back and watch that second season of the Demon King working at the
Devil is a Part-Timer.
Yeah, the Devil is a Part-Timer.
I do keep wanting to do that, but I want to watch the first season again because it was probably 10 years ago.
I was about to say, another series I could have watched instead of watching Orphan like an idiot.
Well, I'm tasking you for June to watch Devil is a Part-Timer Part 2 or whatever it is.
I will try my best, Kate.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And we will see you next month.
Bye.